Mime talk.
Really, mime
talk.
Do you have a phobia of mimes?
Or? No, I'm good with mimes, but I also love ending early. So.
That's true. Let's get us the heck out of here.
Let's start with introductions, David.
What?
Oh, why are you here?
What?
Wow. That's my LA response. It's David. He's helping. Council member.
I'm Ben, council member.
TJ Lee Miyake, council member.
Melina Clark, council staff.
David Jordan, council staff.
Beth Neary, HIV Health Services.
Bill Hirsch, KLRB.
Steven Spano, HCAP.
Jewel.
Lee Jewel, council member, and I need to leave at 4:30.
Oh, yeah, I need to leave by 4:30.
Council member.
Hi, we're asking everybody's name around the table.
And Juba Kalamka, St. James Infirmary.
Thank you.
And the papers are back there today.
Oh, okay, cool. Thank you.
Take a look at the agenda for today.
I know, just noticed that I forgot to change June to July on the top of the agenda, so just in case anyone wanted to point that out to me, I'm just pointing it out myself.
It looks like...
It is July 3rd.
It's also 2020, Ben. Whole year
and
month.
We're in Northern California.
Is Trump still president?
No. That we won't know until the end of 2020.
Any other additions to approving the agenda as amended?
Approved.
Then the agenda is approved. Take a look at the minutes from last 2 months ago.
So long ago.
Amendments to the agenda, or I'm sorry, the minutes. Okay, any opposition approving the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Announcements. All right, public comment.
I will give a brief update on budget advocacy and where we landed as a result of budget advocacy as of last Wednesday night. We secured a backfill of the $66,000 cut to Ryan White. We achieved a first ever cost of doing business increase for Ryan White contracts.
Oh, wow.
2%, not what we had hoped for, but still better than zero. We secured full funding for the initiative that was begun last year as a result of Supervisor Sheehy's efforts for additional funding for mental health services for long-term survivors. So that was $500 that got actualized in this, the last year's budget cycle. And then we have $500,000 in each of the next 2 years, so hopefully that will be baselined in the city's budget moving forward, so we won't have to fight for that. We received $500 for one of the RCFCIs to avoid program closure. Hopefully there will be some more focused conversation with the city around sustaining those programs. We received some good news around housing subsidies, so $1 million in housing subsidies for seniors and persons with disabilities, and then $1 million in housing subsidies targeted for people living with HIV. There was a disappointment in the mayor's budget around funding for the safer injection sites, but the legislation didn't move forward at the state level, and that may have played into that. So we will continue to push for that.
Thanks so much for your work, Bill. Any other public comment? All right. Co-chair election. I'm going to make a nomination. I'd like to nominate Ben Kabangan.
I second that.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You'd be awesome.
You sure?
I have full confidence in you.
Any other nominations? All right. It's going to be a thriller, Ben. We can just do roll call or
yeah, show hands.
Show hands. All in favor of Ben Kabangan as the co-chair?
You can vote for yourself, Ben.
I abstain.
Ooh. All right. Awesome. Congratulations, Ben. Thank you very much. So much.
You're welcome.
Nice to have a co-chair. Yeah. Each cap reports.
So, first of all, I wanted to thank folks for their patience with ALRP dealing with staffing changes. We did act as expeditiously as possible, and we were really thrilled to have Stephen in this role. I know that he wasn't able to report last month, so there's a couple months that he's reporting on. I will just note that he has really dived into this position with a great deal of passion and a deep commitment for the folks that he's working with. He's had some fairly gnarly situations that he has addressed straight on to try and keep folks in services, to keep folks housed, and he's doing a great job. So I'm really thrilled that he's here to present to you this afternoon, and if there's anything that I can do to help answer any questions as he's still learning his way around a bit.
Thanks. So I guess I'm kind of new to this process, so I'll just talk about the service categories. There was a significant number of inpatient support issues this time around, some of which bordered on housing issues that Bill mentioned. The trends are, you know, through March seem to kind of hover around that in money management. There were a number of cases that got passed on to me from my predecessor, most of which have been resolved and or closed at this time. There's some holdover clients that are either on hold while we're either pending communication with the client or with the service provider, but it seems like everything has kind of worked through a resolution process at this point. And a significant number of new clients have come on board even since this report. So
yeah.
If there's any issues or questions about what's been written, I'm happy to answer them.
What's the two most gnarly cases you had? I want to hear about this.
So one was involving, so there's two, the messiest situations tend to revolve around the ones where there's a conflict between roommates or housemates in those instances. They also tend to be the most difficult to resolve because oftentimes you're dealing with either double or triple diagnoses that are competing with competing interests. So working with the service providers in that regard tends to be a very hands-on process because they have there's not only a lot of personality issues, but there's also a lot of legal landmines to navigate as well surrounding confidentiality and such. I think we've done it, and the service providers have been really good at communicating in those ways and with me and working with me. So I'm hoping that those relationships continue to make those processes a little bit more familiar to us all so that we can work through it with a little bit more ease next time and allow just the issues of the clients to run the show as opposed to us trying to feel each other out as well. So, and a lot of that, I mean, it's a month that I've been talking with people too, so.
I would also note that because housing is such a critical resource for our clients, we do our very best to keep folks housed, even when there is a tricky situation to navigate, and especially when folks are living with a roommate in a shared room, there are issues that can be very challenging because the folks that are being served through these programs often have significant behavioral challenges. So to have two people sharing a room can be a challenge. So being mindful of impressing upon the client how critical this service is and how if they were to lose that service, there would not likely be another housing placement available for them, and how we have to really work to try and keep them engaged in that service and work with the service provider. I would say that the other program that was a gnarly situation was a shelter for a transitional aged youth, and that is also a really touchy situation because often these young people are living with a lot of behavioral challenges. And so I think Stephen did a great job of trying to facilitate a resolution between the service provider and the client. I would say that unfortunately the client's life is so unstable that it has been difficult for the client to move forward with sort of the agreed upon conversation and guidelines. So,
and it's also it's exacerbated by the lack of facility of alternative facilities for that particular need too. I mean, you know, there's two options basically out there for transitional youth, and the third one being figure it out yourself. You know, and so that was a particularly gnarly case.
I will just note that Stephen has jumped into all those situations with a great deal of passion for his clients, and I think people really feel supported by him in this process. And he, you know, he's developing relationships with service providers. Hopefully those relationships will grow and he'll be able to leverage that trust and understanding with service providers to help his clients with those issues.
And you're going to be going out on the close sessions too.
I've actually been to one already. We did one at Ashanti last year. I think there's another one on the books for the 24th this year.
How was that for you?
It was great. I mean, to speak directly with consumers is a really lucky, lucky opportunity to be able to preempt some issues and to let them know that that the program is there to assist them if and when something comes down, rather than to engage them in crisis mode or engage them in a state of high energy, to be able to see them when they're trying to learn. I think it's great access. I'm looking forward to doing the COLA sections as often as I can. I think that's a really important one. Yeah, any opportunities for consumer contact at a point before there's a challenge, I think is a really good opportunity.
Thanks to moving forward to continuing the work with you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, of course, thank you all.
Mike even do the update?
He does, so maybe we'll push until he shows up, if he shows up.
Yeah. Carry forward funding allocation.
Do you guys have
this
one? So Dean presented at the council meeting last week that we have about $240,000 left over from unspent funding, which is around 2 to 2.5% of our full Ryan White Part A award. And today, usually at the first of the council meetings in the month, HIV Health Services presents our suggestion to consider, and then you guys can edit at will, in all ways. So with the roughly $240,000, we recommend the highest amount, roughly $160,000, to go to emergency financial assistance, partly for some of these, housing is always an issue, and that's one of the main things they can address, although they address other things as well. Funding for, additionally, also coming out of the homeless, actually a lot of council presentations and the homeless work group and other COLAs and advocacy, we're looking into doing medication lockers, additional programs. There are at least two service providers that already have them, and they aren't 100% fully utilized, to be honest. So we're doing additional investigation. Dean and Bill and some people from CHAP have visited several sites. we're tentatively penciling in $50,000 for that. The lockers themselves only cost about $50 each. So that is to be at multiple agencies and to have installation. And not a lot of staffing is required in the model we have seen so far. They're pretty close to self-managed. And we can expand on that a little bit more, but that's why the amount is roughly small there.
Can you explain a little bit more about the underutilization, what you think is going on there?
It's possible people don't know about it, and personally I'm speculating that it's not very convenient to go to a location daily to get medication if it doesn't also meet other needs. So where they're placed is going to be very important, that it's a place people are going frequently or is very adjacent to where they're going to be on a daily basis.
So how will then you address that need to so they will be utilized in a way that's beneficial for them?
We have service providers that the category this would fall under in HRSA would be either medical case management or treatment adherence for medication adherence. So we would work with the providers who are in areas where people are more likely to be experiencing homelessness to see if they have space for this and interest in this. There are some liability issues potentially, so they may not want to take on a short-term project like this because the nature I probably should have led with. The nature of carry forward funding is it's one-time funding, and federally they only consider things that they consider one-time.
Right.
So it's not necessarily, it's to purchase and install lockers, and then it would be the agency's responsibility to some extent to if that fits into their program. So some investigation will go on over the course of this month if this is moving forward through the committees to figure out which providers might be interested among the medical case management and treatment adherence providers.
Would you consider this, well, since it's not new, but would you consider like a more effective roll-up model, a pilot program? Is that how you would approach the providers?
Yes, I think so.
Because if they're concerned about just one-time funding, you know, that's a big concern, right?
It is. It has to fit into a workflow that they're doing, more
right.
or less, to be
right.
to be sustainable. So if they have clients coming in for weekly or daily events, it might work well. Or if they have been wanting to do this, or if they're one of the providers that already has it that would like to expand.
And how long is this investigation period?
We have to turn in this letter by the end of the month,
okay.
and you guys have to vote on it by the council meeting on, I want to say, the 22nd. So before that,
no.
and after Monday.
You said you're looking into this to make it more effective.
Oh, yeah, so Dean is scheduling a couple more site visits for a few staff from HIV Health Services, and he's reaching out to some of the most likely providers.
And what's that period, and when does he hope to have that completed, and when can we receive that information from him?
Most likely it will take about 2 weeks to get all of that together.
Okay.
So I'm not sure when either the next or the following of these meetings.
So I'm just wondering if... And I understand the urgency of this. We have until the summer to consider this, right? The carryover funds, no?
No.
No, the letter has to go in by the end of this month.
Oh, okay.
So it has to be voted on this council. It doesn't, there may be other ways to do it with savings from the general fund, or there may be an alternate way. If
yeah,
it's
no,
not
I'm not.
This, this way,
I think it's totally worthy. I'm just wondering if it would benefit the council to make this decision to get that report as soon as possible when we make this decision, right?
Yes, it would.
Right.
Dave, did you
have something? My question was if you could remind me again exactly how long we have to spend down. So what is our timetable as far as once the decision is made, how long
so we freshly have the amount, and we send in the letter by the end of this month. HRSA could decide as soon as they want, but typically we find out in September.
Mm-hmm.
And so we consider October 1st to February 28th or 29th in a leap year to be the spend down period.
Got it.
So there's about a 5 month turnaround, and contracting, it would there's no time for RFPs or starting new contract. It has to be
yeah.
somebody we're working with already
right.
in order
right.
to not lose the funds, because there's no carry forward money. It's,
right.
It has to be spent in those 5 months.
I was just, I mean, because it involves like installation and construction of stuff potentially.
Yes,
within,
so, and no individual expense
like,
can be greater than $5,000, because capital is a whole other thing that wouldn't be spendable in that amount of time. Yes, TJ.
So, is the part of the problem it's being underutilized the location, and if so, can you tell us what geographic part of the city it's in?
I wasn't on those particular visits, so I will try to remember, but I'm
okay.
worried I will misrepresent something. I know Bill and Tracy and some others from CHEP went a couple months ago to one place, and then Dean and Kevin and I think Bill went only a week or two ago to somewhere, and
but can you
from
tell
my
us
recollection of what I heard about this visit,
yeah.
there was a bank of 6 medication lockers, and it was loosely speaking in the Tenderloin, so it was a good location,
okay.
And a place that I would imagine people frequent pretty regularly. I don't know about more than weekly, and it was a pretty anonymous. Clients had a combination and could access their locker directly, and then staff had a key if needed, and there was a photo inside the locker so staff could verify they were passing medication out to the right or opening the locker for the right person, and then people just made kind of an X or scribble to identify where that it was their locker, but there were only 6 in this instance. So it was probably a new program. I don't know the background of it, so it might be underutilized because it's new in that case, but that's we had originally, you know, in talks, we had originally thought around 100,000 is what we were going to put on the budget, but we put 50 because we're starting to realize the lockers themselves aren't that expensive and starting smaller in a more pilot function, but probably starting at more than one place in order to really give it a good chance. So it's a balance. So when we say we penciled in that number, we really did, and Dean asked that I say something along the lines of money not spent here, we would recommend go more towards emergency financial services, though you can recommend a different thing.
How big are they? Can you give a description of like what does it look like?
Yeah, I was looking over Dean's shoulder and is Googling at lockers.com. If you take an interest, they have every locker you can imagine. The ones he was envisioning based on his experience at that program, and Bill has seen them other places too, that I think are larger scale, were just, I mean, they were like this, almost square, less than a foot square. So they really are mostly designed for medication.
Yeah.
Not
for like storing stuff or anything.
Yeah, and some of us in HHS wanted more, of course, and we're making quite an argument for like, basically walk-in freezers. That was not realistic for this. And you know, Dean was upset. That might be something that has to come from the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. Like, so this is really more about. For people who are HIV positive and are nervous about losing their medication in raids or just keeping it on them, we're not sure how big the demand is, essentially. And we're not sure how big the demand to provide the services amongst the limited number of providers that we can approach in the time frame. It's not that limited, though. There's quite a few possibilities.
Is it just limited to HIV meds or?
What you put in the locker, at least in that one program, so you know, it's the program would have some say in how it's administered.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's a prescribed drug to that person.
It would be the agency setting up their policies of how much they want to monitor what is in the locker.
Yeah.
But that's probably what it would be, yes.
Yeah, okay. And has there was talk about, like, maybe 10 years ago trying to fund, like, a mobile van?
For lockers?
For medication, particularly around homeless people, and then knowing that it would be like in one place in the morning, always the same hours every day, and then in the afternoon in the same. And I'm just wondering if that is even still on the radar.
Not my radar, and I haven't been here that back to the 10 years, so it hasn't been discussed super actively in these types of conversations where we're talking about things that have to be expended quickly. I'll find out.
Okay.
Good.
You might have answered this already. Do you plan to evaluate the efficacy of this or utilization?
We discussed it, but we have not planned. Part of that discussion surrounded whether or not ARIES data entry would be required. It's real specific for any service providers in the room, because if ARIES data is recommended and its treatment adherence is a medical category, medical case management has people, you know, the viral loads. So you could, in theory, evaluate whether the viral load suppression rate increases or other positive outcomes. So there's a desire to evaluate it, but there's not a plan at this time.
It seems to me there would be key to doing that, right? For the homeless population, we're going to have to approach this in multiple directions, right? Any way possible. And I consider this to be one opportunity to help address a multi-pronged problem, right? But I think in order to continue to fund it, which we may want to do if it proves to be effective, right, if you get the buy-in, we're going to need to evaluate it somehow to see if it's working, right? To see if clients are utilizing it, they're adhering to their medication, and we're seeing maybe connection to services or just their viral load is suppressed, right?
And I hate to put more work on you all,
And I understand that you're just trying to spend down, and this is just $50,000, but
yeah.
I think what you're describing is probably my biggest, it's like a concern slash I think there's an opportunity, because this essentially can be seen as its own intervention that you are doing for medication adherence. So I think it'd be a shame to not invest in kind of a really good evaluation of the locker's
effectiveness.
No, the ones.
I don't know if I'm able to ask questions and participate in this, or if I'm constrained to public comment, but I will just say I would like to step back and get a better understanding of how the proposals around what the items are for carry forward spending come to the council. In my long memory, there used to be like an email that would go out to providers and ask folks how they might use carry forward dollars, and then we would respond, and sometimes people might want computers, or sometimes people might want interns in their office funded, and often the kind of default setting was around emergency financial assistance and food, which, you know, are well deserving, and they're certainly able to be spent down in a short period of time, which is an important part of the deal. But I haven't in a long time been the recipient of any invitation to, like, how might you spend the carry forward dollars if the carry forward dollars are a certain amount. So just saying that I don't want to throw a wrench into this process, but you know, it is helpful, I think, to open it up a little bit, because there may be programs that could come up with some creative ideas, especially if you're kind of struggling with underutilization of a service that you're using underutilized dollars for. So just throwing that out.
And I guess, you know, and that's a good...
Sorry, I just want to apologize. I had Dave
oh,
first.
Sorry. Okay.
Did you want to respond to that
mm-hmm.
before I said anything?
No, please go ahead. I'll respond to my, as I'm able, but that was also before my time. I do have a response, but not very...
I mean, my comment was not in response to that, but I will say that at one point we had a larger window to make this decision, and that window has sort of shrunk on us a little bit in recent years, and so that may be where you're seeing that is as you know, like that our window is extremely short right now to sort of make a decision and get back to her